Today's episode of Flags Fly Forever is brought to you by Pennant Wars, our presenting sponsor for the podcast. Pennant Wars is an online baseball management game where you call the shots as the GM of your own baseball franchise. Build a team that plays your brand of baseball, draft and develop amateurs, spend big in the free agent market, or make blockbuster trades with other owners. Pennant Wars' in-depth and realistic simulation engine plays out full 162-game seasons, pitch by pitch, over the course of just 6 weeks. Best of all, the Pennant Wars universe is always on, so you can check in and manage your team from anywhere, at home, on your phone, or even at work. There are only a few weeks left in the fantasy baseball season, so now is the perfect time to get started with Pennant Wars. Head over to PennantWars.com to try it out for free today. That's PennantWars.com. Try it for free today.
The guy who I'm probably going to struggle with the most, and I think I'm going to end up being pretty aggressive on him, is Danny Duffy. I mean, he's done this reasonably quietly, but he has become an ace.
Undone. Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 104 of Flags Fly Forever. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and as always, I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. Gentlemen, what's going on?
Season's winding down. Paying attention to very few leagues anymore. It's nice. Everything's very centralized.
Mike, what is I Dream of Jeannie? What is that?
I Dream of Jeannie was a television show that started in 1965 and ended in 1970, and it featured the incomparable Barbara Eden playing a genie. You know what a genie is, right?
I saw Aladdin. That's more my generation.
That's more your speed.
Well, once upon a time in television, George, there was a conceit where everything had to kind of be kept a secret in terms of if someone had magic or powers. And think of Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It's kind of a modern day version of that, but with a genie instead of a witch.
Oh, see, I liked Salem. Salem was cool for a cat, I mean, I guess. Anyway, this podcast is already off the rails.
Are we gonna like go into a conversation about the pros and cons of Out of This World?
I don't know what that is, but yes,
my sister liked that show.
That show was great.
Yeah.
All right. Back to 2016, gentlemen. Thank you. This has been fun.
You can't see me, but I'm holding my index fingers together.
I wish I understood these references.
I approve of this, Brett.
So damn frustrating to do this. All right, we got a fun show planned. We're going to talk a little bit about 2017 because, let's face it, there's like a week or two left in the season. There's 12 games left for Major League teams as we record this. Gary Sanchez is homeward twice tonight. He's wicked awesome. We don't have a lot of insight for the rest of the year. Good luck the rest of the way in your playoffs. If you're still in it, hope you take home the hardware, but the die has been cast, as they like to say. There's not a lot we can do for you at this point. So we're going to look a little bit ahead to 2017 because forecasting the future is way more fun. And these two guys are pretty good prognosticators. Case in point, Brett, Hanley Ramirez is a top 10 first baseman, which is pretty magical.
It is very magical. I love talking about Hanley Ramirez.
That was one of your bigger calls in the offseason. I remember we spent so much time talking about it. And
did we talk about it on the I get my podcasts confused all the time, but we were talking about the guys that we were buying at the deadline, right?
I think
and
so.
In like July.
Yes.
And I talked about Hanley Ramirez then. And I believe my argument was he just gets randomly hot. and you want, if you're taking some chances, you want guys that get more randomly hot than other guys, and he's been randomly hot.
You know, nobody here in Boston, because I live in New England, no one seems to have a good explanation as to why this happened. Like, no one can explain what changed. It was just all of a sudden Hanley just decided he was going to be a beast, and it happened.
Nothing changes. He did this with the Dodgers in 2013. He goes through these periods for like 4, 6, 8 weeks where he's just unconscious.
Yeah, I think the health is huge too, because he has not had any injury problems really, and he's gonna play like 150 games this year, which I don't think he's done since like his Miami days. So yeah, good call on Hanley. We got just a ton of interesting guys. We're going to talk some strategy. We'll talk about some specific players. This is going to be a pretty fun podcast, but I got to get the housekeeping out of the way. You can follow all of us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. That's with 2 S's and 2 L's. Brett is at Dynasty Guru, and Mike is at Mike Gianella, where he talks about the Mets and puns about everything imaginable. You can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. Subscribe today with a 1-year premium membership. Our off-season content is coming up, and it's probably my favorite time of the year because we recap everything that just happened and we look forward to next year. It's a lot of fun. We got a really good slate coming up from the BP Fantasy team, so you're going to want to subscribe to that. Gentlemen, we do have one change at BP. Aaron Gleeman is our new editor-in-chief. Congratulations, Aaron. That's fun news.
You know he's not here, right?
No, I know, but...
I don't think he's... I wonder if Aaron will listen to this, because I know that Aaron's background going way back was with Roto-World and Fantasy, so I don't know if he plays or not, though, at this point.
He does.
Look, he does, okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he play. I know he does some Sim League stuff, I think. I don't know if he does regular Fantasy anymore. I don't know. We'll Aaron, if you're listening, write us in and tell us.
Aaron, you should come on the podcast.
You're obviously welcome on the show. Or your predecessor, who will miss, Sam Miller, never appeared on the show, and that makes me a little sad.
I mean, technically, Aaron Gleeman is in charge, so of course he can do what he wants. But
of course, Sam is invited to come on the show too, still as well. You know, pretty much anyone who wants to come on the show can come on the show, if you write about baseball, if you're listening.
Random aside, but Brett, didn't the Tino crew go on Effectively Wild one time?
We did. We had a little crossover episode.
That was good.
I listened to that. That was really good.
Awesome. So finally, don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio app, whatever app you're using to listen to the podcast. Every rating and review helps us out tremendously. We appreciate the support. So let's dive right into 2017. I want to start out with the first round, because this is my general thought process on this. Who's the player in the first round that is there for you that wasn't necessarily a year ago that you feel more confident in now? Obviously, guys like Trout, Machado, Goldschmidt, they're obvious first round guys. But who's a guy who's ascended to that first round territory that you feel the most confident if you're going to draft tomorrow and you said, look, I can build my team around this guy? Who's the guy who's ascended into that class that you feel the best about going forward? And I'll start with you, Mike, because you handle the valuation side, so you maybe have a little bit more of a process standpoint to this. But who do you look at in the first round and go, this might be the best investment if I'm building a team right now?
Well, when you say ascended, though, you're talking about somebody who wasn't there last year, or can it just be anybody?
I guess someone, maybe like Chris Bryant was like on the periphery of being a first-round pick. Like, he was right there, but now he's right there at top five. So I guess it can be like that. I'm just like, I guess excluding guys like Trout and Goldschmidt.
Yeah, because I was going to say, including Trout would be kind of...
Like, we knew they were good, so we don't have to...
Bad or obvious. And, you know, then the other side, you've got guys like, you know, McCutchen, who we're very confident won't be there. You know, that's a tough question, because I was looking at this, and I was looking at this in light of Carlos Correa, because I kind of got a question about his value and, you know, where he dropped. The first round this year was probably one of the more predictable first rounds we've seen in a while. Ron Chandler, you know, the legend Ron Chandler in Fantasy, formerly of the founder of Baseball HQ, and you know, later on, the, you know, his own enterprise, you know, Chandler Park, you know, he's in Tout Wars, you know, Brett and I, well, you met him too, George, this year, you know, the, really nice
the
guy.
The Godfather.
Yeah, he's one of them. You know, between him, you know, John Benson and Alex Patton, they're like the Trinity, yep. I suppose. But, you know, Ron always talks about how 5 out of 15 guys return value in the first round or have returned first round value. This year, I think it's like 7 or 8 or maybe even 9. So this is a tougher question to answer because there's a guy, we talked about him before the show, George, is a guy like Jonathan VR who, you know, is returning first round value or close to it, but nobody's going to, you know, bet on him. I know I'm kind of deferring this a little bit, but correct me if I'm wrong, Brett, you know, you're not going to pay, you know, a first round price for Jonathan VR, are you? Like I certainly wouldn't.
No, I'm absolutely not.
Yeah, and he might not even be a second round guy. Now, if you take him in the second round, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. But there's enough downside there that I don't really want to go that route. I think the guy that I might be inclined to take in the first round, who was outside of the first round last year, is Charlie Blackman. You know, just kind of
Mike.
Yeah, sorry, man.
just
kind of eyeballing it. The steals drop, but the power went up. He's in Coors. You know, obviously, if he gets traded in the offseason, that all goes out the window. But the thing about Blackman is that even if you take the Coors factor out, he's been hitting pretty well on the road, too. And he's a 5-category guy. The runs better, he's not quite there. But he's somebody I could pretty easily see sneaking in that first round for me. And then again, Brett, I apologize.
Yeah, now I'm going to have to think of a different answer. Damn it. Well, literally, I had the stat page loaded up so that I could spit out actual numbers. And Blackman, I think, is a great – I think he's a great example of this. And I don't want to retread all over what Mike said already, but – The guy who I will bring up, and the guy who I'm going to bring up is Joey Votto.
That was my second choice, by the way.
A great minds thinking alike again.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the beginning of the season struggles combined with the fact that just nobody gives a crap what the Reds are doing right now. I think is muting just how incredible Votto has been in the second half. He's, you know, it's in the end, his numbers are going to look similar and people are going to go into next year. They're going to say, okay, Joey Votto's a year older. There's going to be slippage here. I don't quite know, how interested I am, but, you know, especially that high up. But I think Votto is a conceivable first rounder in labor mix next year. And I don't know where he. Do you remember where he went this year?
You know, I should have probably had up the NFBC page.
I could take a guess. I want to say he was a third round pick.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was a third rounder. But I'm actually going to go look it up because I do have this bookmarked.
I know our colleague Wilson Karaman sent us that file with ADP. So.
He was 37th overall. So in a 15-team league, that's which the NFBC is, that's middle of the third round. You know, even a 12-team, that's right outside the third round, beginning of the fourth. So yeah, you know, third round, 12-teamer, that's a fourth round. But we talked to deeper leagues, so let's say third round.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking specifically in labor. He was end of the second round, so he was 28th overall.
Yeah, that makes sense. The experts liked him a little bit more than the market did.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, labor is not even an OBP league, but I think that, you know, I think he slides up more heading in 2017 than he was in 2016. You know, there's still going to be issues with what's around him in Cincinnati, but you know, I think we're even the people who really believe in lineup protection are finding fewer and fewer reasons to believe in it. I mean, you have Freddie Freeman, who's having an outstanding year in Atlanta this year with nobody around him. You have Evan Longoria, who's having a fantastic year in Tampa with just about nobody around him. It is very reasonable for a fantasy superstar to exist in a lineup full of fantasy duds.
Okay, Mike, you brought up Jonathan VR a few minutes ago, and I think he's going to be one of the more polarizing players this offseason because people are going to rush to call him a bust or the least likely guy to repeat what he did because of the BABIP. I think his BABIP right now is something crazy, like almost 400. I know he's had some, and he's struck out a bunch. He struck out 165 times this year, which is a ton. His success rate on stolen bases is not great. If you look at the metrics, the advanced metrics, he's not actually a great base runner. But when you look at his totals, he's hitting .284 right now with 16 home runs and 57 steals. In the last 20 years, he's one of just six players to hit above .280 with 15 or more home runs and more than 50 stolen bases in a single year, which is crazy because – it just doesn't happen that often. To give you some examples of who those guys are, Hanley Ramirez and Carl Crawford have each done it twice. The only other guys who've done it, Eric Burns in 2007 and Craig Biggio in 1998. So it's pretty rare, and I'm not sure how you evaluate VR going forward because this season is really just such an outlier, both historically and for this guy's career arc. So how do you view someone like VR or players in general who've just had insane career years that now we have to make a prediction going forward on?
Well, that's a very broad question.
Sorry.
That's okay. So, a couple of things. First of all, generally speaking, and I know this is a cop out and the term gets overused. You want to build in some regression. We talked about this with a better player last year in Carlos Correa. And, I thought it was more appropriate to take him at the end of the first round, beginning of the second round. He was taken sixth overall. He's returning about fourth round value in a 15-team league, which is good. And, if you drafted him, you can't be too upset about that. But, he just wasn't one of those big first round talents that you expected. So that's kind of what I'm looking at with VR, like putting the stats aside. I would expect him to return about fourth or fifth round value next year, and that's assuming that all those steals or a lot of those steals come back, just because we know that things are going to go wrong with a player who produces at this level, who, as you point out, George, is an elite talent. So if I'm looking at, let's say, 35 to 40 steals for VR instead of 57, if I'm looking at 8 to 10 home runs, if I'm looking at a .250, .260 batting average, that's still really good, and particularly in this steel-starved era, and that's still a pretty safe prediction. I just don't want to look at his numbers this year and say he's going to do the same exact thing. If he does, that's gravy, but I'm just not going to pay for that. He's somebody I'm probably going to have ranked in a draft league like in the 30s or maybe even the 40s. I just know I'm not going to get him. I know from the early talk on him that he's likely to go in the second round, early third round, and I won't own him.
Yeah, in this really early 2017 mock that's going on, he went in the third round. So that's a 15-team league. So, yeah, the ADP is probably going to be in that range. I agree with you there. Brett, I hope this isn't another really broad question, but the middle infield spots, I mean, you can look it up, but there's been a number of people who have written about it, but Mike and I were talking about this before we went on the air tonight, but those positions hit for more power than the outfield spots for like the first time ever in history. Do you sort of change how you view the middle infield spots at second base and shortstop now because of how much power guys are hitting for? I mean, you got guys like Rougned Odor hitting 30, Brian Dozier's at 40 home runs, even middle of the road sort of second basemen are still routinely clearing that 20 home run plateau. Are you kind of changing how you view those positions now, or is it just kind of maintaining the same status quo going forward with those spots?
It is, but it's not because of those guys. It's because of what happens. It's because of what happens underneath those guys. You're talking about, you know, just looking at the middle infield rank, just general rankings for this year. There aren't too many names in here that are going to lose eligibility for 2017. You have Ian Desmond, who won't start off with eligibility, but there's at least a non-zero percent chance that he will end up somewhere that will play him at shortstop next year, so he could sneak back in there pretty quickly. And aside from that, Trey Turner's not going to have second base eligibility next year. He's only been playing outfield, right?
No, he has 29, I think 29 games at second. I looked it up today because
Scott White of
CBS was talking about this and saying, you know, should Turner be ranked second overall at second base? And, you know, it was a whole discussion about that.
Shall we
partake in the Trey Turner discussion? Because
I think we have to.
Yeah, we'll get there.
We'll dabble.
Yeah. But I mean, just scrolling down through the players who are not just in the top 20 in the middle infield, but outside the top 20. Carlos Correa is 21. Anthony Rendon is 22. Trevor Story is 24. I know his season got cut short, but damn.
My God.
Jonathan Scope is 26. Jonathan Scope is hitting 270 with 25 home runs. Elemis Diaz is 28th. Starlin Castro is 32nd, and Starlin Castro is having a pretty good season. Neil Walker is 35th. Addison Russell is 36th. Marcus Semien is outside the top 40, and he might hit 30 home runs. Javi Baez is outside the top 40. Chris Owens, Troy Tulowitzki. It's not just the big names. It's the depth that's in the middle infield that is insane. And I think that's where you're gonna. I think that's where you're gonna notice the big difference. That the guys that you're gonna get at second base and shortstop and middle infield, even in a 15-team league, if you wait, are not going to be, we saw this in labor this year because we waited on middle infield and we ended up being fine because, well, a rising tide lifts all boats. But we ended up with Neil Walker, Marcus Semien, and Estrubel Cabrera. And
Cabrera's got 21 home runs or something.
Cabrera's like the hottest hitter in baseball over the last month and a half.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Yeah, so that's really where we're gonna feel it next year, and I think it is going to devalue some of the guys who are bigger names in the middle infield, guys who we are used to pairing with their eligibility to make their cases a lot stronger, especially in year to year. This doesn't affect guys like Altuve and Manny Machado and even like Xander Bogaerts, but players like Jason Kipnis or Dustin Pedroia, Elvis Andrus, people who are really good performers, but there's just not a whole lot separating that tier from the next 15 to 20 guys anymore. And that was always historically the concern with middle infield, but we're in a very different place right now, and we're definitely going to have to adjust.
I promise we'll get to Trey Turner later, but Mike, I want to turn our attention to pitchers for a minute because I think people are going to – I think the big question that people are going to have to settle on is where they want to rank Clayton Kershaw in their draft, whether it's in their – where he's going to end up in your valuations or where you're comfortable taking him in a snake draft. Where do you see Kershaw right now?
Well, here's my thing about Kershaw. I know some people disagree because of the injury and the nature of the injury, but if you drafted Clayton Kershaw this year as high as you did, you know, which is about third or fourth, and you know, I'm gonna again go look it up. So Kershaw was, he wound up fourth. He was behind Trout, Goldschmidt, and Bryce Harper. If you believe in the talent with Kershaw and you believe in the ability of him to put your team in that stratosphere, I don't see how you don't draft him in the first round still. Even if it's a little bit lower, even if it's like toward the back end of the first round, I understand the risk, but there's just so much that he can bring to your team that there's really just no reason not to take that chance. And the downside to me is him doing what he did this year, which is missing some time or a significant amount of time, throwing 100, 120 innings. But those innings, you know they're going to be great, or you would assume they're going to be great. So I would rather take the risk with him if you're going to take the risk in a pitch, if you believe in that, as opposed to going the other way and being too conservative and letting somebody else get him. You know, this especially applies if you're like, well, I'm not going to take Kershaw, but I'm going to take Max Scherzer at the back end of the first round. I'm going to take Madison Bumgarner, you know, at the back end of the first round. I'd rather get Kersh if he's up there in the middle to the end of the first round.
Brett, who's a pitcher for you that right now off the top of your head, you think you're going to have the toughest time ranking or making a decision on next year?
The toughest time ranking or making a decision on?
I'm thinking like guys like Rich Hill, that you're like, how many innings do I project for Rich Hill? You know, guys like that.
The guy who I'm probably going to struggle with the most, and I think I'm going to end up being pretty aggressive on him, is Danny Duffy. Duffy is, I mean, he's done this reasonably quietly, but he has become an ace very, very quietly. And he's done it in a way that is very unanticipated, given both his track record and his pedigree. I mean, he was not someone who was ever really thought of as being particularly pitch efficient. He had strikeout stuff, but it was, you know, sort of your guy who would go 5 1/3 and walk 3 batters and, you know, strike out 6 or 7, and that's sort of how the stat line would look. But he has been going consistently deep into games, conserving his pitch count, striking people out. He's been incredible, and I think there's a very, very good argument to make for Danny Duffy as a top 20 pitcher next year, and I'm probably going to be one of the people ending up making it.
For me, it's kind of reminiscent of what happened with Carlos Carrasco, where he went to the bullpen, kind of refined everything mechanically, got into this insane groove where everything was working for him, and really maxed out that potential once he moved back in the rotation. And Duffy, actually, if you remember Carrasco, I think it was like 2014 when he did this, or might have been the end of 2013, but he only had like a month and a half where he did this. Duffy's done this for like 4 months now. he's done this over a much longer sample. So I think, especially if you look at like DRA and CFIP and some of the advanced metrics we have at BP, like they really love Danny Duffy. So yeah, I agree with you there. Mike, who's a guy you're kind of bullish on after what they've done this year? You look at going forward and go, I feel confident this guy is going to be pretty good in 2017.
Well,
obviously Brett Kershaw,
Brett, you know, once again stole my guy, so we're really well
this is why you guys co-own expert league teams, because
yeah, I guess so, although I think we've, what's scary is we've kind of converged on our thinking as we've gone along. but the guy I'm kind of high on, and he's probably a little bit more under the radar, and I know I've mentioned him before, it's Jared Eichhoff. I've watched him a lot this year here in Philadelphia. He went through a period, you know, kind of the middle of the year where he slumped a little bit, where he wasn't as effective, and his big problem, you know, from what I saw, was just in, you know, the middle of the lineup, second time through, third time through, he just struggled. He wasn't getting his curve over. Everything else was just kind of flat. And, you know, he's turned around and really made the adjustment. And, you know, if you go back and you look at his last, his last 10 starts. He's given up 3 earned runs or fewer in 7 of those starts. He's still not really going deep, and you know, I think that's more a product of the Phillies just kind of being conservative. They're not playing for anything this year. He's one of those pitchers who, you know, he's not a huge strikeout guy in this context, but heading into tonight, he had 148, 180 and a third innings. He doesn't walk a lot of guys. You know, the one thing I'd like to see him, you know, back off of are the home runs. But again, that's something that's just a product of him, you know, kind of learning to pitch, learning to trust his stuff. And I see him taking not a big step forward. You know, I'm not trying to sell him as high as, you know, clearly not as high as Duffy, but I could see him being a quality 3, quality 4 in a deeper mixed league. And I really, because of where what his stat line looks like, he's going to get drafted well below that.
Guy for me is John Gray. I think people are going to be scared off because of the Coors factor, but the strikeouts are there. He's a power guy. He's been really, really impressive this year, and I think people are going to be hesitant to invest in him again next year. So I kind of look at him as someone who I think just average leagues. I don't think that'll be the case in expert leagues, but I think in just your average fantasy league, with guys who maybe aren't paying as close attention, they'll go, why are you drafting a Colorado pitcher? And I think you'll be able to get him at a discount, all things considered. So I like John Gray in that regard. Brett, Carter Capps set a major league record with 60 saves this year. Oh, wait, no, he didn't. Sorry.
maybe while he was playing, while he's playing MLB The Show.
He might have.
He probably should be doing that with his elbow injury, but, you know.
I miss Carter Capps. I'm not a doctor. Oh, I miss Carter Capps so much.
I'm not a doctor.
Yes. Thank you, Belichick. Actually, they have the. Have you guys seen the MLB TV, the Game Changer? Have you guys used that yet?
I've seen it. I haven't used it yet.
Okay, Mike, have you used it?
Nope. Oh. I know what it is, but I haven't used it.
Okay, this thing was made for Carter Capps appearances. Like, it'll flip over to. I have it set up. My top 5 settings right now. I have Gary Sanchez batting, Billy Hamilton on base, Mookie Betts batting, Kyle Bearclaw pitching, and then whatever Vince Scully's on.
Yep. That's that sounds like a really good idea.
Oh, it's fun. You got to check it out if you haven't. Brett, on a serious note, let's talk about Trey Turner.
Okay.
What do you see? This is a really complicated question. I guess let's start off with Turner the player, because obviously the league's going to adjust to him, and then he's going to have to adjust back. How do you see that going, I guess, is the general way to start with Turner, because obviously he's been fantastic, but how do you see this playing out in the future in terms of that aspect of it?
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that someone who is as free swinging as Trey Turner is not going to hit a wall at some point next year. But the thing is that, you know, I don't think it's going to be the type of wall that keeps him from having significant fantasy value. So, you know, he's hitting 345 right now. I don't think you'll find a person on the planet who believes that he's a 345 hitter. The question is whether he is someone who could potentially hit near 300, or whether he's someone who, you know, as his scouting reports throughout the minors said, was more of a 260 to 270 guy. I think his contact rate has been a little bit more impressive than I think people thought right off the bat, especially given his speed. I think he can maintain a reasonably high BABIP, not this high, but he can maintain a 330, 340 BABIP, and maybe that does make him a 280 to 290 hitter. But, you know, the power I think is something that major league pitchers are going to be able to stay away from a little bit. I don't see him as a 20 home run hitter over the course of a full season. I think this is about where he'll end up, sort of the 10 to 13 range. But the stolen bases are real and they're fantastic. And oh my, you've got to be kidding me.
What happened?
Are you reacting to the Mets and Cespedes just missing that ball?
You've got to be
Well, I got to be honest, and if you're listening, this is Wednesday night as the Mets have just gotten swept by the Braves. The Mets deserve to lose every game in this series. So
they deserve to lose this game, but not that way. That's just cruel.
Did you see the ball that Cespedes hit before that Kemp like managed to like not catch, but like right by the line?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just one of those series where if things had gone right for the Mets, they could have won, but just so much bad managing, so many bad plays, it's really difficult to get too mad about one individual result. Although, yeah, watching the replay, it looks even worse.
Yep. Yeah, he took a home run back from him. Yeah, on the last
play. Oh, my God, and he just – holy shit.
Yep.
It just got into the webbing of his glove, too.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, and we'll be right back here on the Mets postgame show here on
we need to now it's like, do you want to be Darling and get into Lack of Fundamentals, Brett, or do you want to be Keith and talk about your commute to the game?
Break screens.
I don't want to be either right now.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing
you
though.
Made the World Series a year ago.
But the other thing is, no matter what happens with the Giants later tonight, they're still tied with the Cardinals heading into their last few games. The season is not over.
Bartolo Colon, game one starter. Who's still left in the Mets rotation?
It would be Syndergaard in the wild.
Syndergaard.
Oh, it's Syndergaard still.
So it would be Colon in game one if they got to the NLDS. Yeah.
Oh my God. That guy just will not go away.
The
Giants, awesome.
Giants. Before we leave the Mets, the Giants and the Cardinals are also not very good. So that's really what it comes down to. These teams are all slightly above average.
All right, Mike.
Welcome to the wild card here.
Mike, back to Trey Turner. We're gonna get through this, okay? Where do you see him if you had to project him out, where do you sort of see him falling in terms of what you'd be comfortable paying? Because that's the real question we want to know here. In this sort of industry draft that's going on, Turner went 48th overall. So do you think you'd be comfortable spending a top 50 pick? Like
talking
50 range. Okay.
Yeah, I top 50. So where'd you say he went?
He went 48 overall.
That's pretty good. I think that's pretty good value, actually.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's early and the hype will pick up, and I could see him sneaking into the 30s, but
you know, I this will be like the third time I brought him up, but it is the Correa comp where Correa at the beginning. I was talking on Twitter with DJ Short of RotoWorld about this, and you know, we were talking about I said Turner's going to be this year's Correa insofar as by the time we get to February and March and all the drafts, you're going to be looking at a first round. I see Turner going late first round, early second round. And to me, that's too high. But the other side of that is if you can get him, you know, 48 is end of the third round, a 15 team. If you can get him end of the second, beginning of the third, he could be a bargain there. What you're looking at with him, I see the power dropping off. He's not getting 345, and the average gets me nervous just with that walk rate. And yes, I know he's a good contact hitter. I know he hits bad balls. But with a walk rate that low, I just don't see him. I don't want to say it's not sustainable. It's more a matter of it's volatile. It's a better way to put it. But everything else is there. The powers look better than we thought it would. And even if he doesn't hit like 25 to 30 home runs, which he's on pace to do, you know, 15 to 20, you know, is certainly realistic. And the speed is amazing. And unless the Mets somehow cure their, you know, going back to the Mets, unless they somehow cure their problems with holding base runners, he gets to face them 19 times next year. So Turner has the potential. You were talking about VR and how he could crater. I see Turner holding a lot of his value just because of those steals.
Brett, I mean, I look at Trey Turner, and I think, like, I see a lot of D. Gordon here, but with obviously more over-the-fence power. The profile, to me, is, like, similar. High BABIP, he's going to hit for a decent average. He's going to – the stolen bases will be there. The swing and miss in his game. I see, like, peak – you know, D. Gordon's, like, 2015 season. Like, is that sort of a realistic comp, or am I crazy? Because that's what I see when I look at his line.
Yeah, I think slightly more power, but I think that's in range. I trust Honestly, I trust Trey Turner more long term as a hitter than I do D. Gordon. Although I would trust D. Gordon more for cumulative steals than I would for than I would Trey Turner, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think I reserve the right to change my mind before draft season actually starts next year. But I think I would feel comfortable drafting Turner as a top 30 player.
All right, we're gonna
probably
hold
somewhere
you.
In the 25 to 30 range. I think in a batting average league, not in an OBP league, it's a little different. I think, I think 50 to 60 steals are reasonable, and bring that accompany that with even 10 homers and a 270 average, which I think is pretty achievable. And yeah, I think that's pretty good value even for that spot.
Trey Turner is the type of guy you should be excited about. Like this is someone you should really invest. I think we're all on board with that. As if that wasn't obvious enough for analysis, Mike. Let's see. How do you view stolen bases? Because they're way down, obviously. So how do you view that overall? I don't even know how to frame this question almost, well, because we've talked about it for a while now, but do you place an impact on targeting specific guys with that skill now, or how are you viewing steals?
This is going to sound like a weird answer, and I've been thinking about this now for a couple months, but for years I've been telling people to kind of target steals and go get them and don't, you know, necessarily like Billy Hamilton is a good example. Brett and I have always been big proponents. You know, we've had him in labor two of the last 3 years of going out and getting that stolen base value. Now, though, what I'm starting to see in the game of baseball itself is unless you have a Billy Hamilton or a VR or a Turner, teams aren't running, you know, nearly as much as you'd expect them to. Just because, you know, some of it is metrics driven and the fact that you lose more with a caught, much more with a caught stealing than you gain with a steal. Some of it is just, you know, because there are more home runs and more power right now, you know, you don't want to take that risk. So I'm kind of reluctant to target a steal guy per se, you know, unless it's a Hamilton, unless it's somebody who you just know is going to steal 50 or 60 bases. You know, a good example of a player like that who, you know, has value in a mono, but I don't really like so much in a mix, and you know, I'll throw out a name, is Elvis Andrus. You know, Elvis Andrus has 23 steals, and he's hitting about 300, and you know that looks pretty good. And in a mono, in AL only, he's worth $25, which I know sounds crazy. He's worth a dollar less than Robbie Cano because of what the formula says his steals are worth. That's fine in an only league, and I'd be willing to pay in the low 20s for him. In a mixed league, I'd rather wait and hope that somebody pops up rather than sit with an Elvis Andrus on my roster all season long and just kind of get stats like besides the steals where it's like, yeah, you know, I'm not getting nothing and I'm getting that batting average, but otherwise there's just not a lot to get with him. There's still guys like Eduardo Nunez who will pop up and – you know, you'll be able to get some, you know, enough steals and enough stats elsewhere that I'm fine targeting the elite steal guys, but there aren't that many guys. Even Jose Altuve, who, you know, is a great player and, you know, it should be a first round talent. The steals dropped off with him this year. If you drafted him just for those stolen bases, you know, you certainly aren't going to be unhappy with Jose Altuve, but that's not what you got. You didn't get that high impact stolen base guy with him.
Yeah, the variable with those kind of fringy guys who have those types of skill sets that you're looking for, you know, leadoff type guys, guys with pop and steals, the variable that's tough to project with them, like looking at a guy like VR, is like plate appearances. Coming into this year, like how many plate appearances would you have put down for him? Like it's hard to project him for 700 plate appearances or something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Nunez was the same way.
Right.
It's more the point that players like that, and you know, notice the teams that guys like that are on too. You know, Hamilton's on a team that's not winning. VR is on a team that's not winning. You know, Nunez was on a team, you know, before he got traded to the Giants that wasn't winning. something you want to look for, a team that's rebuilding or a team that's tanking or whatever you want to call it, is more likely to run a player like that out there, you know, take the risk with the steals. They have nothing else to lose than a team in contention. You know, now some of this is exaggerated by teams like the Mets and, you know, a team like the Cardinals who, you know, they simply don't run at all now. But even contending teams that have the threats, they're kind of, I don't want to say they're afraid, but they're rightfully conservative about pushing a guy out there and going for all those stolen bases.
Yeah, exactly. Brett, I like doing this time of the year because everything's sort of fresh in our mind, all our impressions of guys and what we think. So you kind of gave us a picture earlier with Duffy, but who's a hitter that has stood out to you that you really like this year that maybe you've changed your opinion on that you are looking at tentatively targeting going into next year's drafts, that type of guy?
Tentatively targeting?
Yeah, someone that you really were impressed by this year that you go,
who I changed my opinion of.
No, it doesn't have to be. I'm just trying to find a way to frame the question to generate a... I don't even know. I'm exhausted. I've been up since 5:30 in the morning. I have no idea what I'm saying anymore.
All right, I'm gonna go the boring veteran route because I like going the boring veteran route. I'm gonna say Robinson Cano. Mm-hmm. I think Mike and I both liked Cano heading into this season. When there were a fair number of people sort of heading in the opposite direction. And another one of these seasons under his belt. And I think, you know, I think he's a very, very reliable top. I'd say he's probably what, top 25 to 30 players. He's in the Trey Turner range, right?
The Trey Turner zone.
Yeah, I think Cano is a top 30 player pretty. I think he's a top 30 player pretty easily for 2017. And you know the full season of performance I think is gonna help. He's gonna, you know, he's almost pushing 40 home runs. And while I don't think that's gonna be something he hits I don't think that's something he's gonna hit year to year. I think, you know, 330 home runs is absolutely something that is fully in play again in 2017.
Mike, who's a hitter for you that you've kind of circled right now that you are targeting tentatively moving into next year?
This question's always problematic because I, well,
yes, it
you
is.
Got well, you guys know how it is. I'll. You know, Brett and I contribute to Peter Kreutzer's magazine, and he has, like, you know, his, you know, boom and bust guys. And I'm always trying to do this based on the market. So as far as a target, you know, this might sound really weird. I'll tell you who I'm going to target next year. Bryce Harper. People are so down on Bryce Harper right now that I look at him, you know, I still see a guy who has all the potential that he has. You know, I know the batting average is terrible. I know that he's been pitched around. But one of the biggest knocks on him was health. He's been relatively healthy. I just can't see, you know, even if Bryce Harper only bounces back to like 275 next year at the batting average, it's just hard not to see him producing elite talent. And there's only so much of a floor with him. He kind of reminds me of before this year, you know, a rich man's Justin Upton, where Upton was always knocked as somebody who, you know, was in his bad years, he wasn't good, he didn't live up to the potential. But Harper's a guy, if you look at his numbers, there's only so much floor there. And when I say I'm targeting him, it's going to be tough because I still see some people taking him in the first round, as they should. But if he slips at all, you know, if he slips at all to that late first round, early second round, which, you know, he could give us some of the names being bandied about, I'm going to have him.
I think the Tigers would like to get their hands on a rich man's Justin Upton. That would be...
He has been for like the last month and a half.
Yeah, let's ignore the first 5 months of his tenure there. Brett, give me the top shortstop prospect in 2021. Go.
Kevin Maitan, right? He's a lock. He's gonna be an all star.
Who's the next Juan Soto? I'm dying to know.
The next ones, I don't know. Some kid who's a sophomore in high school sitting around in his living room somewhere in the Dominican Republic. I have no idea.
I kid around. Those are the prospect questions we get all the time. I love them. They're great. We don't know. If we knew, we probably wouldn't be telling you if we did. sorry to ruin that for everyone. chat with us all off season. All right, we need to take a break and wrap things up. This has been fun though. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 104 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I want to thank our sponsor, Pennant Wars, once again. If you haven't checked it out, you should head over to pennantwars.com. Try it for free today. Subscribe today to Baseball Prospectus with a one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for the super premium membership. You get access to the bat signal. You can send us questions about your 40-team, 75-man roster fantasy league, and we'll answer those as soon as possible. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. And I am at George Bissell. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. For Brett Sarah and Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. And until our next show in 2 weeks, so long, everybody.
Bye.
See you in 2 weeks.
Genie thing was hilarious, man. That was funny.
Thanks. Did you ever watch that show?
No, I didn't know you were going to go into like the IMDb of it. Like, I was impressed. That was good.
I mean, it's I Dream of Jeannie.
I don't know what that is.
Everybody, I wasn't alive for it.
Do you know what? Yeah, well, you know, it is weird because there was when we were kid. Well, even when you were a kid, Brett, like shows like that were on syndication, and
they were all on TV. Yeah.
Well, syndication's kind of like shows. It's kind of disappeared now.
I know.